Hey, Craig, I think you're going to have to do the show, the first part of the show, by yourself.
Why that?
I'll just be there in a minute, okay?
What's wrong with you? Oh, never mind.
Welcome to Chuck Chat Technorama. I'm your host, Chuck Tomasi, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Let me check. Yes, I'm okay.
Fit as a fiddle. This is show number 74 for January 12, 2006. We've got a lot of stuff coming up in tonight's show. You'll kind of catch a theme as we go through this. We've got
a theme.
It means there's a lot of similarity between the segments and topics and things.
Okay, I don't have to write one.
I'd like you to write a theme. Christmas is done. We're not watching that movie for another 11 and a half months.
It's in constant replay in my head.
We've got more dig than you can shake a stick at tonight. We've got a segment with Kevin Rose that didn't fit into the interview that went out on the feed last night. We've got...
That's right.
A short clip from Steve Mallett, who was a victim of a misdirected
dig army. He got trampled by the dig army.
And we've got some of the usual features you've known to come to know and love.
Yes, and you're seeing it right now.
And Craig's not singing this time.
Come on, baby, let's bust a move.
We'll be right back.
Ice, baby.
On this day in tech history for January 12th, 2006. This is January 12th. It's the 12th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are only 353 days remaining in 2006. It was on this date in 1866, the Royal Aeronautical Society is formed in London. A long-distance radio message is sent on this date in 1908 from the Eiffel Tower for the first time. Freeman Gosden and Charles Correll premiere their radio program Sam and Harry, which is a precursor to Amos and Andy, possibly the first situation comedy, on this date in 1926. And on this date in 1966, Batman, the TV series, debuts on ABC. All in the Family debuts on the same date in 1971. In 1986, the Space Shuttle Columbia takes off with the first Hispanic-American astronaut, Dr. Franklin R. Chang Diaz. And it was on this date... The fictional computer HAL from 2001, A Space Odyssey, becomes operational. In the movie by Stanley Kubrick, HAL was born in 1992, while in the book by Arthur C. Clarke, the same event occurs in 1997. And in 1998, 19 European nations agreed to forbid human cloning. On this date in 2001, William Hewlett, American engineer and businessman, passed away at the age of 88. He was best known as half of Hewlett-Packard. And Deep Impact launches from Cape Canaveral by a Delta II rocket on this date in 2005. Happy birthday goes out on this date in 1876 to Jack London, the American author. Mikhail Gurevich, the Russian aircraft designer, was born on this date in 1892. Paul Hermann Müller, the Swiss chemist and recipient of the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine, was born on this date in 1899. And in 1905, James Bennett Griffin, the American archaeologist, is born. Sergei Korolev, the Russian rocket scientist, was born on this date in 1907. And Jeff Bezos, the president, CEO, and chairman of the board at Amazon.com, turns 42 today. And that's the way it was on this day in tech history for January 12th, 2006.
This is Tim Dressen from the 500 by Midnight podcast, and you're listening to Chuck Tomasi on ChuckChat.com.
Jeff Bezos sent me a wireless access point today.
How nice is that?
Well, right. I had to pay for it at Amazon.com, but that was a nice gesture on his part.
That sucks. What kind of feature is that? That's not WED 2.0.
We've got some listener feedback from Jan Lund Thomason of the C64 Takeaway Podcast. It says, "Hi-ho, Chuck and Craig. I found your show via the Podcrawl site, and they mentioned the Woz interview." Well, that was nice of them.
Yeah.
Subscribed and am doing a terrible job with a cold read right now. Enjoying the ride so far. Mind you, hearing Woz say he doesn't use BitTorrent because he wants to be squeaky clean kind of ticked me off. As you guys are probably well aware of, BitTorrent is being used for lots of legitimate purposes, like Linux distros, the system thing by Kevin Rose, hack.5, /.review podcast, etc., etc., etc. That's my King and I reference.
et cetera.
It's perfectly possible to stray from the dark side of the force while running BitTorrent, just like it's possible to have a web browser on your box without surfing for illegal material. Wink, wink. You are absolutely correct.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Yes, we kind of thought the same thing when he was talking about BitTorrent, but yeah. You know what? Craig has a theory on that.
Yeah, I think what happened was we had led into the whole conversation talking about the RIAA. And I can't remember what else. It was, you know, talking about the MPAA and all their action, too. And then the next thing we were talking about was BitTorrent. And I think he kind of associated the two together. And I hope that he can realize that there's good uses for BitTorrent, because obviously there are.
Well, there's a petition going around to get BitTorrent implemented into iTunes. Think it'll happen?
Absolutely.
Not.
I'm sure they're working hard on it right now.
You never know. Jobs has a way of keeping his ear to the ground. He knows what's going on. He knows why people need that. But the real question is, can it be done? It's done in other aggregators. I don't know why
can't
not.
Can it be done? Yeah, I mean, anybody can go read open source code. There's like 1,000 of them that do BitTorrent support.
I wonder if it's just a stigma thing.
Yeah, I think that's part of it.
Hey, don't forget, we're going to be doing a live show. Well, I'll be alive. Craig will be alive. But we're moving it from Sunday night recording to Saturday afternoon.
Hopefully.
If you're in the Appleton area, we'll be at, I will be at, with a few live audience fans, at Buffalo Wild Wings on Casaloma Drive by the Fox River Mall, noon on Saturday the 14th. So hopefully you get this in time if you're a local listener. I know there are a few, and I have a couple of geek friends that I can email.
Hey, you know, if this goes well, Chuck will be available for bar mitzvahs and mall openings as well.
On this day in bar mitzvah history.
Having a gila.
We need your help, gentle listener. Our Frapper map needs your love. It's based on how many subscribers and listeners we actually have. We have a sorry excuse of representation on the Frapper map. So if you go to this site and you see the little badge that says "Where in the world are we?", please put your pin on the Frapper map if you haven't done so already. I know there are many, many more of you. I know I used to have a different listener map, and I couldn't migrate the stuff over. So I apologize if you've already done it. But here we go. If you've already got a Frapper account, you can do like 20 of them in 5 minutes.
Hey, I want to see if somebody can post a pin that lives in the Yukon territory. That's the challenge for this
week. I think
we
have one in Saskatchewan at the moment.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Okay, let's move along. You have a hack strange story that you snuck in on me. Andem's Projects Radio Babylon. Tell me about this.
Well, first off, I want you to look, put your mouse over the domain or the link and look at the domain name.
Holy cow. www.11001101001010110100100100001. I'm not making this up. I think it's a 32-bit number. .org.
And I had trouble telling people how to get to my blog.
Yeah.
Spindle.com.
Good grief. It reminds me of that episode of Star Trek where they had the binars on there.
Yeah. Okay, Mom, I want you to go to www.110. Anyway. He's got a.
Was that 10 or 011? After the zero.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway.
Well, anyway, I'll read you what the description of this little hack. The description is, what is it? It's a wireless battery-powered device. You turn it on near a friendly wireless network, I guess like your own network or something like that, mm-hmm. that contains iTunes shares and plug in your headphones. It picks a random iTunes share, picks a random tune, and starts playing, kind of like the radio. Is repeating to a board, or the batteries are dead, or both. So it's kind of cool. It uses the gum sticks, those little Linux.
The CPU on a PCB.
Yeah, exactly. Uses that, and I guess a wireless interface, and the whole works. And that's basically what it does. And he's got I think he's got the programs and everything that you need to install on it, and diagrams if you need to wire anything up. So it's kind of cool.
That is cool. I gotta check that out.
Yeah, like an iTunes radio.
All right, let's jump into our. What are we calling this? Special feature? Extended edition? What is this? This Kevin Rose clip that didn't make it into the main...
This is a clip that I wanted to play in the interview, but it was nixed by our editor.
Can you hear the tone of his voice?
Anyway, this is the part of the interview with Kevin Rose that just came out in our feed that... I asked him about Area 51 because he's alluded to it several times on TV when he was on there.
To so be fair, on my defense, the rest of the show was about Kevin, his history, dig.com, a little bit about Revision 3. And then we get to this piece about Area 51.
Hey, have you listened to our show, Chuck?
It has no continuity.
I think it fits perfect. So anyway, roll that beautiful beam footage.
This is your inner geek speaking. Listen to Chuck Chat Technorama.
What can you tell us about Area 51?
Well, I worked out of the Nevada test site it was about a year and a half, 2 years or so, and... Mm-hmm. For people that don't know, the test site is this facility out in the middle of nowhere in the Nevada desert. It's about 50 miles outside of Las Vegas, which is where I grew up. Mm-hmm. And basically, the test site is broken into all these different areas. And Area 51 is just one of the different areas. The test site is actually controlled by the Air Force now. But What will happen is that a company will come to the Department of Energy, which runs the test site, and say, you know, we would like to, we have a project that we would like to run in one of the areas, or we would like to test this out, or, you know, if there's a need for huge open spaces of land to test out various different things, whether, you know, a lot of the stuff they were doing at the time was subcritical nuclear tests that were mm-hmm. being done out there, where they would detonate devices and without them going nuclear could determine the yield of the device, and there was other projects that were just going on out in the middle of nowhere, or you know, buried in mountains or underground, or you know, they also have the there's a few other facilities out there like the DAFT device assembly facility where they assemble nuclear weapons, and mm-hmm. The BEEF, the big explosive experimental facility, was out there.
BEEF.
Yeah. So it was just one of those things where my job at the time was to, you know, it took us a while to become cleared. And then once we had our security clearance, we would get calls from the different areas based on what was going on. I mean, they all had to be networked in some capacity or they would be tied in. And so if, you know, a switch went down or they were having problems with connectivity in one form or fashion, they would put in calls into a team of us. There was actually three of us out there that handled supporting the entire test site. And so we would have to travel out to the various areas and go into those areas. And sometimes, depending on the area, we would have to be escorted and into certain places. And we would just work until the job was done and then get out of the area.
Wow. So no interfacing your Mac to alien technology, right?
No, nothing crazy like that. You know, I have a feeling that most of the, at least in Area 51, I have a feeling that most of the really cool stuff was done quite a long time ago there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was other areas that were considered to be, I don't know, 51 really wasn't what, it was kind of a known thing by that point, you know, it wasn't really as top secret as it once was.
Oh, right. 52 is now the big area.
Yeah. What was it? I can't remember the names. The S3 or something like that. I don't remember the names of the areas that were really... I don't remember. But, yeah, it was fun. It was a great experience. It was really quite crazy. They had some very unique stuff going on there. But it was fun. It was just a great time. It was crazy just driving down the street in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, we'd, like, pull off the side of the road, and there was this crater called one of the most famous craters out there, Sedan Crater. Mm-hmm. And you would just get out of the truck and go stand at the edge of this crater that was, like, you know, 10 football fields in length, and it's this huge crater where a nuclear bomb detonated.
Oh, wow. You know,
but it was just, it was pretty crazy being exposed to that.
No pun intended there, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we would wear little gasometers that would, like, you know, track there was no, it was so long ago that the levels were safe to walk around. There were still areas that were kind of, like, fenced off, like, don't come here, otherwise you'll start growing things.
But, come back with a third arm. Hey.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Tim from Winecast, and when I want to get in touch with my inner geek, I go to Chuck Chat Technorama. 101, guys.
All right, real quick, we've got back-to-back interview attack, but before we go on, I must give a shout-out to the people in the chat room. We've got, of course, Mark Shepard presiding over everything. We've got Joni. Welcome back, Joni. We've got Zadum, Tim Elliott, Kevin M. from Tampa. Who else is in there? I can't remember how to say these names. So, welcome.
Kevin,
if you're
was
in the chat room.
There,
yep, Kevin was in there. And welcome. They keep coming and going, so it's hard to do this while the screen is refreshing. But join us in the chat room if you want.
Are they going out for a beer run or something?
Maybe they go out for the bathroom run like we did before.
I like the beer run idea better. Okay.
Who's next up on the interview?
Last night, Steve Mallett was kind enough to talk to me last night. Who's Steve Mallett, you ask? Steve Mallett is a guy, gentleman I talked to. He felt the wrath of the Dig Army this week. What the story boiled down to is that someone posted an article about him on Dig, and the story just kind of ran away with itself. Everyone on Dig pretty much dug it and didn't read through the article, do enough sufficient reading to actually find out all the details. So I'll let Steve actually tell you all about it, and he'll tell you a little bit of aftermath. And like I said, I recorded this last night, so here you go.
Hello, this is Dr. Floyd.
And this is Dr. Grant from the Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd.
And you're listening to Chuck Chat Technorama.
Ooh, Technorama. That sounds fancy and sci-fi.
Yeah.
And you know, I hear that's with Chuck and Craig.
Who?
Craig.
Craig Stepp?
Yes, Craig Stepp. You know him, right?
Oh, sure. Who doesn't know him?
I've got Steve Mallett.
Hey there.
And it seems like he's had a pretty interesting week. He had a run-in with the Dig Army, so to speak. So tell us how your week's been there, Steve.
It's been really interesting. I guess it really kind of started. I'm on the East Coast, so last night after putting my kids to bed, I came down to my office and was just checking out my new Dig clone based on Plig, which is an open source project that tries to sort of emulate the UI and the editorial process behind Dig. And there were all these spam stories that had been published to it. Someone had submitted something. It was like, Linux Filter has stolen Dig's code or CSS or Image. I don't recall right now.
I think it was the CSS style sheet or something.
I was thinking, what is this? And then, of course, there were 7 or 8 comments in there that looked like they were written by maybe some 10-year-olds or 14-year-olds.
Right.
I've been around the block, and you know, this is how the internet works sometimes. So I just went back and traced back what was happening, and then found this story on Dig about me being a thief, and you know, my God, it was almost like I had committed some sort of sacrilege. People were frothing at the mouth, and
oh my gosh,
these comments go, what the, you know, what has happened here? And
what did I do?
Exactly. I was like, oh my God, what? You know, I can't imagine how anybody had actually, you know, kind of read into what I had done with the linuxfilter.com site in this way. And then after reading through some comments, the idea, of course, was to figure out, you know, where is this coming from?
Mm-hmm.
And then read this attack on me from this blog, I think it was Blogspot, this Blogspot blogger who had just created this Blogspot account, and it had written these pretty terrible things about me, saying how he had done all this research about how I had stolen this code, and I was like, oh man, this is brutal. So I mean, I was pretty upset about it. I had a lot, you know, some pretty hard feelings last night.
Mm-hmm.
Going to bed, I just made a very brief comment in the thread, the Dig thread, about this, just kind of laying out just the simple facts.
Right.
Where I had gotten this code from the Plig project, and you know, if anything had happened with their code to create this, you know, I was thinking, of course, you know, it's pretty, you know, it looked to me like it was pretty unintentional.
Sure.
And just kind of left it at that. Went to bed, you know, tossed and turned all night thinking about this, and just kind of wondering what was going to be, you know, what was I going to be presented with when I woke up in the morning. So this morning was really interesting. I must say, I think a lot of people were really expecting me to you know, come out fighting and be really negative about Dig, but mm-hmm. you know, I'm a fan of Dig. I really, really like the open back end of the editorial.
Right.
I like how you can see stuff that's just coming in, and I like how there's voting to put stuff on the front page if that's what you're into. And you know, Dig is, I was talking to a number of people today about this, and Kevin Rose, I spoke with Kevin Rose today.
Mm-hmm.
Had an indirect message from Jay Adelstein, I think, just talking about what had happened. And you know, my general impression is that, you know, this was, of course, really bad, how this first started out, but it really came full circle, and with the Dig users actually going out of their way today to clear my name.
Yeah, because I thought that was interesting. Yesterday, it's like there was a big flood of digs on how you were stealing this code.
The number of digs just spiked so high, and I was very surprised that it did that. But, you know, the users, when I got up this morning and went back and started reading through again, you know, I was really, really, really happy and very encouraged that so many Dig users had kind of come to my defense overnight. Mm-hmm. And once enough people started to really, you know, do the research and pick up on what had happened, I mean, there were comments in there, people saying, you know, geez, I'm sorry. People going back trying to undig the vote.
Yeah, like, unsubscribing you from all the mailing lists they put you on, I'm sure.
Yeah, there was some guy who's posting my home phone number, my cell phone number, and did want to subscribe me to a bunch of mailing lists. And,
gosh.
You know, someone did step up and say, oh, God, please mark this guy as spam, and that went away. So, you know, while the whole thing really blew up at first.
Mm-hmm.
It's really come around full circle, and I think in general, aside from a sorry few, the dig community is looking really good.
We got Web 2.0, but it's the same old internet.
Yep,
just good to show you.
Chuck Chat Technorama. There's nothing worse than a geek with a sense of humor.
Sure there is. Two geeks with no sense of humor.
Speak for yourself, buddy.
Did we already use that line?
I'm having some deja vu. I will. Hey, I do want to say, what was funny about this whole dig Steve Mallett thing.
Ha ha funny?
Well.
Funny like a clown?
It's kind of funny.
How do I mean?
Funny, ha ha, not funny. Never mind. Anyway, the morning after this whole thing blew up, the day of, I was in there trying, I read this guy's facts and everything that was supposed to be, I've got proof, I've got irrefutable proof that this happened. Well, I looked at his proof and I was like, okay, yeah, I'm following you. Well, if you go to Steve's site, is the Linux filter, look at the fact. The fact says, hey, if you want a site that looks like this, go here. And it was a link to the open source project. So then I put two and two together. I looked at the proof that guy had. I basically took the part of the URL that had this, that pointed to the style sheet,
mm-hmm.
put it on the plig URL, and there was the same style sheet. And I was like, this guy didn't get it. He just downloaded the whole thing and, the whole project, and it had that in it. Anyway, the next morning on O'Reilly's Radar site, they had an article written up about the whole thing, and it was talking about Steve, and it was backing up Steve, and it said kudos to Cauldron for pointing it out for first, because I had actually put it in the dig comments. It's not his fault. I was trying to tell people to stop digging it. Anyway, I got kudos, through O'Reilly. So that was
Craig, he's our man. If he can't fix it, no one can.
Yeah. I tried to put my finger in the dam, but it was just too big.
Okay, we've got one more chapter, one more installment in our How to Destroy the Earth series.
Will you blow it up already?
No. Some of these aren't very possible, but as you proceed, they get more and more possible. Listen on.
Sure.
Welcome to our series on How to Destroy the Earth. This week, number 6 as we count down to number 1. Destroyed by vacuum energy detonation. What you'll need for this experiment is a light bulb. This is a fun one. Contemporary scientific theories tell us that what we may see as vacuum is only vacuum on average, and actually thriving with vast amounts of particles and antiparticles constantly appearing and then annihilating each other. It also suggests that the volume of space enclosed by a light bulb contains enough vacuum energy to boil every ocean in the world. Therefore, vacuum energy could prove to be the most abundant energy source of any kind. Which is where you come in. All you need to do is figure out how to extract this energy and harness it to some kind of power plant. This can easily be done without arousing too much suspicion, then surreptitiously allow the reaction to run out of control. The resulting release of energy would easily be enough to annihilate all of the planet Earth and probably the Sun, too. On the ranking of possibility, this is slightly possible. Earth's final resting place for this? A rapidly expanding cloud of particles of varying size. The earliest feasible completion date? The year 2060 or so. Hey, are we done?
No.
What do you got?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, well.
I'm done.
I don't know. Nothing.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Your job, your mission, should you choose to accept, is to send us feedback, and Craig will tell you how.
And you can give our Frapper map some attention. Listener line is 206-222-CHAT. Please call us. Send us a message. We'd like to hear from you.
We didn't have any messages this time.
No, only from Hi-Ho.
Oh, no.
And there's email and other stuff, too.
Yawn. Anyway, getting back to the thing here. You can call the listener line at 206-222-CHAT. That's 2428. You can email Chuck at chuckchat.com, and you can email audio comments to chuckchat@gmail.com. Email me, K-R-E-G, at chucktech.com, and visit the web by www.chucktech.com for forums, swag, webcam, mailing us, links, show notes, and more.
Vote at Podcast Alley. Eat less salt. Be good to your body. Don't smoke. Exercise regularly. See your doctor.
Or smoke more and drink more.
Yikes. Thank you for listening, everybody. Really appreciate it. Whether you're a new listener or come from another planet, and if this is your first time, whatever that happens to be. As always, big binary high five.
101.